With apologies to Dr. Seuss, the Grinch in the sermon title is me. And this act of stealing and returning Thanksgiving will happen now, in the next 20 minutes. You see, I have this irritating inner conflict when Thanksgiving rolls around. So I'm going to dump all my angst on you until you start to question your plans for Thursday. Don't worry, in the end, I'll give your holiday back, but it might look a little different. From a national standpoint, Thanksgiving is great. Good to drum up positive vibes about life in these United States, especially right now, don't you think? In the midst of national negativity and anxiety and uncertainty about the future, it's good to remind everyone how prosperous is our land and bountiful our harvest. It's good to remind ourselves how blessed we are and to thank God for those blessings. It sets the right tone for citizenry in troubled times. That's the origin of this holiday, something to boost national morale. A day of prayer for Thanksgiving was declared by George Washington in December 1777 and during the Revolutionary War. But it was Abraham Lincoln in 1863, while the Civil War was raging, who declared the last Thursday in November as a national day of Thanksgiving and started an annual tradition. Part of Abe Lincoln's declaration could have been written to us in mid-November 2016. Let me read some of it. I do therefore invite my fellow citizens in every part of the United States and also those who are at sea and those who are sojourning in foreign lands to set apart and observe the last Thursday of November next as a day of thanksgiving and praise to our beneficent Father who dwelleth in the heavens. And I recommend to them that while offering up the thanks justly due to him for such singular deliverances and blessings, they do also, with humble penitence for our national perverseness and disobedience, commend to his tender care all those who have become widows, orphans, mourners, or sufferers in the lamentable civil strife in which we are unavoidably engaged, and fervently implore the imposition of the Almighty hand to heal the wounds of the nation and to restore it as soon as may be consistent with the divine purposes to the full enjoyment of peace, harmony, tranquility, and union. Good for Lincoln. My sentiments exactly. This is a good thing for nations. But as a feast day in the church calendar, I'm conflicted. It's ironic that the most sacred Christian feast days, Christmas and Easter, have been co-opted by our consumeristic secular culture and reinvented as seasons for shopping, decorating, and overindulging, and their great theological core has been gutted. While Thanksgiving, an essentially secular and nationalistic holiday, has been co-opted by the church and wedged into our liturgical calendar. Now, yes, harvest festivals are deeply embedded in religion since forever. They are found in Hebrew scriptures and in most world religions. We just read one of the texts this morning. But the fourth Thursday of November in the U.S. is more than a religious harvest festival. It was instituted as a national holiday and is shaped by civil religion, and there are national interests behind celebrating it. But I'm okay with that part, really. It's healthy for a country to look beyond itself and thank God. That's not what makes me a Thanksgiving Grinch. My problem is that we in the church get a little sloppy theologically every Thanksgiving. The holiday tends to feed into a misunderstanding, I believe, about God that many of us carry within us. Let me lay it out for you. But please don't judge me as a total curmudgeon until I finish. Here's the crux of the matter. I think God gets a lot of blame that is undeserved and a lot of thanks that is misdirected. The phrase that gets bandied around a lot is, count your blessings. This is a season to stop, look around, and make a numerical list, to count all the good things we have in life. And as we count, presumably, we notice our list is long. And we're invited to thank God for these many blessings. But what are we really saying by that? Are we saying that if the barn and pantry and closets are full, that God did that for us directly? Are we saying that God looked down upon us and decided to make our barns full and our blessings abundant? Isn't that what thanking implies? So let's follow that logic. If I thank God for giving me the blessings I have, shouldn't it follow that I also blame God for the good things that don't come my way? If full barns and abundant blessings are signs that God is looking on me with favor, then I guess an empty barn and disaster, loss, suffering, grief would be a sign that God is withholding favor from me. Now, don't mistake me for saying that we shouldn't live with more gratitude. We desperately need more thoughtful and grateful people in this world, just the way Lucinda was talking about with the children. We need that. I think we'd all be better off if we were more thankful as people. We need to open our minds and hearts and see life itself as a gift and notice and name all the gifts that surround us all the time. That's not what I'm talking about. What bothers me is a transactional theology that assumes God specifically sends me blessings as reward for good deeds or for having enough faith or for certain reasons known only to God. And that leads us to trouble. When we make God entirely and directly responsible for the presence of good things in my life, then God also needs to be responsible when they are absent. And if the good breaks we get in life turn out to have disastrous consequences for other people, like having the eye of the storm pass 100 miles to the north and hitting another town instead, or my cancer getting cured and my neighbor's not, then how do I thank God for blessing me without saying that God chose not to bless another? Most of the good things that we're supposed to thank God for this Thursday, plenty of food, shelter, freedom, security, clean water, access to health care, material goods, education, and on, we have to admit there's more to it than God pointing at us and deciding we get the blessings. Lots of factors contribute to the fact that we have these things and many other people in the world do not. Illiteracy, chronic poverty, crime rates, disease, oppression, all kinds of social ills impact certain classes of people more than others. And in our own wealthy nation, if you are an immigrant, or if you have skin of a different color, or subscribe to a minority religion, or were born into certain neighborhoods, or can't break into the world of higher education, then your odds of having an overflowing barn or closet are infinitely smaller than those without those factors. As I said last Sunday, I am a person of privilege, as are most of us here, and we were born into that privilege. Not all our success can be attributed to our hard work, nor can it all be explained by saying God had special regard for us, blessing us beyond others. Saying that, or implying that, is not only theologically wrong, it's offensive to most of the world. Thanksgiving, if we're not careful, takes us very close to that line. We can end up casually thanking God for things we have and stop there, ignoring the unequal economic system tilted in our favor. Of course, the opposite also happens. In times of suffering or loss or illness, we can blame God for causing something that we ourselves contributed to, directly or indirectly. God is not a candyman, and God is not a thief. When we Americans in the most powerful nation, economically, politically, militarily, give our collective thanks to God for our blessings, we at least need to add a big footnote and disclaimer. And now, I think I've probably reached the end of your patience with my cynicism. You may be just as annoyed with me as the residents of Whoville were with Mr. Grinch. So I will slowly start giving Thanksgiving back. First, let me assure you, I do intend to have a big Thanksgiving dinner on Thursday. And I'll do it happily. Our table will be filled to overflowing. We'll be with family in Ohio, an extended family. It's going to be great. I'm going to pray a Thanksgiving prayer. I'm going to express my deep gratitude for a loving and healthy family and a bountiful table. But I'm also going to be careful, or at least try. I'm going to watch my words in that prayer so that I don't give God credit that God would not own. I will try not to imply that God did something for me which God chose not to do for my unfortunate neighbors. I'm going to attempt to make my prayer at the Thanksgiving table an act of unconditional worship, rather than a transaction between God and me. A thank you in exchange for God showing me special favor. Deuteronomy 26 can help us do that. We read this earlier. It's a set of instructions, an order of worship for how the people of Israel should approach God after generations of wandering in the wilderness, eating food and meat that fell from the sky. Once they settle and plant and cultivate, weed and harvest, and bring in the first of their crop, they are to have a festival of worship, bringing the first and best. They are to remind each other where they came from, a nation of wanderers. And they're to thank God with a gift from the harvest and present it publicly in worship, and then have a feast with everyone together, including the foreigners living among them. It's a beautiful classic text about worship and first fruits giving. But take note, in the ancient Near East, where the predominant worldview was that the gods were directly responsible for everything that happened, and those gods were often capricious, giving to some, withholding from others, and our main agenda was staying on the gods' good side, even in that cultural and religious context, a transaction with God was not the point of this liturgy. The people were expected to feast and to celebrate whether it was a good year or bad year. Their first fruits offering in Deuteronomy 26, the tithe set forth in the law, the first and best of the harvest, was not conditional depending on how good the harvest was. Like, if you are blessed, give thanks. If not, you're off the hook. No, the assumption was God was with them and was on their side by definition already. And we all have gifts to give because our gifts are proportionate. It didn't matter if the tithe had to be hauled in with a team of oxen on a wagon piled high, or if the tenth of your harvest could be held in one of your hands. It didn't matter. Either way, you brought it in, you celebrated, and you shared. The focus of that offering, as far as I can tell, had nothing at all to do with how much they had been blessed. The focus of the offering was solely on God, who was their provider. God was the source of all life. God was creator and owner of everything they had. So God deserved their thanks and praise, period. An especially important lesson to be reminded of when they had raised their own crops instead of having it fall from heaven. This was not American-style Thanksgiving. Count your many blessings, then thank God for how many you have. No, the mandate was worship God with all you have and all you are, and return a proportion, no matter how small or large. We owe God everything as the source of all life. The worship we offer is not conditional. In fact, worship itself is a great equalizer between those who have a lot and those who have just little. Because every gift is blessed, is consecrated, and then is shared equally with all. In Deuteronomy, it was shared with the Levites who had no land, and with the aliens, the orphans, and the widows, all ate. All were included, all had enough, and all worshiped God. That's the kind of thanksgiving that the church, I believe, is called to reclaim. So if I stole thanksgiving in the first half of this message, sorry. Now I'm giving it back and asking us to reshape it. Let's reject the affluent American version of this holiday and make it a celebration where all eat. All have enough. All are included. All are shown welcome and hospitality, and all are invited to worship God, the source of all. We have good reason to celebrate and give thanks, and to do so heartily. God is at work in the world, in all the world. God is with us, equally in feast and famine, in blessing and suffering. It's a tough Thanksgiving this year for some in our community who feel alone and anxious and insecure. What better time to put even more leaves on our table and share our abundance with those who need to be reassured they belong? That's great to stick a sign in our yard welcoming our neighbors. I've done that. It says something important. But it's also easy to do. Let's find ways to risk including our neighbors in our lives and entering into theirs, especially those on the edges of our community. And then let us celebrate together the God who is a source of all that is good and deserves our gratitude, however little or much we have.